This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Later in the show, ways to build and protect your credit rating and what to do if your debt is dragging you down. Starting us off this afternoon, last week's strong jobs report and other recent economic news have Wall Street analysts predicting the Federal Reserve will soon raise interest rates. We'll take a look at how even a projected rate increase affects the stock and bond markets, and what could happen if and when a rate increase does occur, with Scott Wyckoff, portfolio manager with Johnson Investment Counsel, and local financial advisor Chris DeSimio. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Chris and Scott, good to see you this afternoon.
Always great to be here.
Thanks for having me.
Chris, a couple numbers out today, aren't there? Pretty significant ones.
Well, the inflation figures were reported, and this is where there's this gigantic divergence between the underlying rate and the headline rate and the core rate. So when you strip out the food and energy, there's a big gap. And so, people are starting to pay more for stuff, and it's starting to show up in interest rates and a lot of other things. So that's, just one number itself does not make a trend. But a lot of them together over time, you can start seeing a pattern developing. Isn't that correct, Mr. Wyckoff?
That's right. And the Fed will focus on not only the headline with inflation rate, which is what a lot of people feel because it's including the food and energy prices, but also the underlying apart from food and energy. So a lot of moving parts within those numbers, but that is one piece of the puzzle here.
So today's number was the producer price index. Is that right, Chris?
Yes, that's so-called PPI.
Inflation at the wholesale level, right?
That's right. That's what people pay for stuff before it gets to you. Before it's not what the store marks it up. It's what it gets to. It's what the people putting it together pay. And again, it was like 0.5, depending on which one you're looking at, 0.5 at the headline, but you strip out the food. Well, it was the other way around, right? It was 0.1, the other one was 0.5.
Yep, and they've been moving around. What's interesting, though, is what's also been moving is wage inflation, which is a key input that the Fed also watches, and that obviously affects people. And that's been moving recently, too, and changing the conversation and starting to impact when people think the Fed might move.
Yeah, so again, these are numbers that go into the Fed's thinking, and it's long been considered that because we are now, how many years now, beyond the financial crisis, six years, 3 months from the bottom, but about 7 years from when everything started to come apart, the Fed has kept interest rates at what many people consider to be levels that are artificially low. Mm-hmm. And now, at some point, they can't keep them down there. And the argument is, how long should they be down this low? How long can you maintain that limbo stance and go under the bar before you have to stand up and move forward? And so the more signs that the economy is doing better, and inflation really is kind of a coincident indicator, it's a pulse. Mm-hmm. It means that there's demand out there because people are wanting to bid higher prices for basic things. These are the kind of things that would get the Fed's attention.
So the Federal Reserve looks at this and says, inflation, it's heating up a bit.
Yeah.
Is that the reaction?
Yeah, and I guess a question for a lot of portfolio managers such as Scott would be, at what point does the Fed say, okay, this is enough, now we're going to push the button and start raising our own benchmark rates higher? When do you think the Fed might put its big toe in the water?
Sure.
Very big toe in the water.
Sure. Well, it's an interesting question, and there are multiple members of the Federal Reserve, so it depends who you ask to a certain extent. There's a dovish camp that wants to keep rates lower for longer, and then there's what they call a hawkish camp that's a little more anxious to start raising rates. But generally right now, the market is not expecting a hike next week when the Fed meets and has a press conference. There are higher expectations for a possible September rate hike. But what most people expect is a 0.25% initial interest rate increase. So the word hike might sound a little misleading.
Yeah, 0.25.
Like you said, dipping their toe in the water.
Yeah, so the overall producer price was up 0.5% for the month of May. They were looking for a 0.4, but then again, if you strip out the food and energy, was still...
Which has been very volatile.
So volatile.
Especially energy.
Right, so volatile. So I guess the point then is, if the Fed is about to raise interest rates, and that, you know, a couple of years ago we had what was called the taper tantrum, right, when the market fell sharply because that's when the first leaks that we might, you know, pull the punch bowl away.
Then they start backing off on the quantitative easing at that point.
Right. That's Then they started rolling back on it. What, in an interest rate environment that's going higher, what does that mean generally for stock prices in a broad sense? And then are there any sectors of the market that might do better in a rising interest rate environment than others?
Well, when the discussion turns to what's going to happen to the stock market related to any single event, there's never a clear-cut, consistent answer. And in this case, that's also true. That being said, the market has enjoyed such a nice run. We're at higher valuations. Stocks are looking a little more expensive. And it's been a long time since 2006 since the market and investors have experienced this event. So we're expecting a little bit of volatility. Now, when we say that, that doesn't mean a market crash. That doesn't even necessarily mean a correction of 10%. It just means probably some jitters for the stock market. But what's interesting, if you look at previous rate hike cycles, around the period where the actual announcement is made, the market's a little jumpy. But if you expand that time frame out a little further from, call it 6 months to about 12 months on either side, typically the stock market gains ground. It's not necessarily a lot, but and the same is true in at times with the bond market. It all depends on what else is going on. There's a lot of things in tandem with what the Fed is doing.
Yeah. So rising interest rates in and of themselves might not be the end of this rally that took hold 6 years and 3 months ago.
Exactly. When you step back, raising rates means the economy's doing better. Inflation's heating up a little bit. People are making more money. And so therefore, it is a good sign. But like I said, there can be some initial jitters.
Chris, the other number that came out today was consumer sentiment, which if I'm not mistaken, it jumped quite a bit more than what was expected. Now, does that factor into the Fed's thinking as well? People are more optimistic, so that can lead to an inflationary state or higher prices.
You know, I'm not so sure that the consumer sentiment numbers depends on which survey. There's the University of Michigan number. There are all sorts of surveys of consumer sentiment. I think the Fed would rather watch what people are doing with their money than what they're saying they're going to do.
Okay.
Because a lot of times, when consumer sentiment is really great, when people say they feel good, that might already be factored into share prices too. And sometimes that number, there are some money managers, and Scott, you might use this at Johnson Investment Counsel, when everyone is so optimistic or so rosy, it means that prices have nowhere to go but down.
Right, sure. Yeah, you got to be careful when everybody's excited. So, but the Fed, like Chris said, they're focused more on underlying data of the real economy. It's hard to believe that they completely ignore what the market is doing and how people are feeling, but they do focus heavily on underlying economic data that's more reliable over time.
Yeah, Chris and Scott, maybe you can explain this too, because the bond market has been on a roller coaster ride lately because of the expectations of higher interest rates. And a lot of us have heard that old expression that, you know, if you have high yields, that's going to lead to a drop in bond prices. Why is that? I thought higher rates would be a good thing for bonds.
It is a good thing eventually. In the short term, as interest rates rise, bond prices fall. Now, one thing to clarify is, what type of bonds are we talking about here? Because bonds is not a catch-all statement. You got to understand, is it a high-quality investment grade?
Such as the benchmark 10-year U.S. Treasury bond.
Right, exactly. And there are bonds out there that are riskier, and bonds that are more conservative. There are bonds with a longer maturity, bonds with a shorter maturity. So that being said, right, when interest rates rise, bond prices fall, the riskier the type of bond, the more you will feel this interest rate hike.
And the longer the maturity, too. And
that's exactly right.
Yeah, because the idea is, let's say that you had a certificate of deposit that was paying 10%. And it was
I'd like to find that.
Right.
Actually.
And it was a 10-year certificate of deposit paying 10%. And you wanted to sell it for some reason. You just wanted to raise some cash. You just felt like selling it for whatever reason. So, and your neighbor, so you ask your friendly neighbor next door if he'd like to buy your certificate paying 10%, and he'd say, well, gee, right now I can only get 1% on my certificate of deposit. Why? I'd be happy to. Your question as the seller is, what do I replace this income with? How much? So if you had a, if you had $10,000 in something paying 10%, that's going to give you $1,000. How much money would you need today at 1% to generate that same $1,000 of income? The answer is $100,000. So that's how bonds get priced. And some bonds do behave differently, especially in a rising interest rate environment. Bonds that have no room to go upward in terms of credit quality, you know, a AAA bond can't get any higher. So those bonds sometimes actually, even though they're higher quality, might suffer more in a rising rate environment than a bond of a medium quality, because that bond of a medium quality company might actually benefit because that company's outlook is better. So it's not just the blanket statement, when rates go down, bonds go up, and you know that kind of thing.
It's more in general then.
Yeah, you have to look under the hood there.
So I guess if I've got a bond that's paying 2% right now and suddenly interest rates go to 3% and I say to my friend, you want to buy my bond? He's going to go, why would I, when I can buy a new one that pays 3?
Unless you mark it down.
Right.
Unless he gets a discount on it.
Right.
Okay.
And that's how people can lose money in something that has an ostensible guarantee from the government, because if you sell it before it matures, that's exactly what will happen.
And Scott, you know, you always hear bonds are a safe investment. You always hear that word thrown around a lot, but that's not necessarily the case,
well,
is it?
Well, it is important to remember that when we talk about a drop in bond prices, you cannot equate that with a drop in stock prices. A correction in the stock market is 10%. A bear market is 20%. The worst year for bonds in a long time was 1994, and in that calendar year, most bonds were down less than 3%. So for bonds, a bad year is nothing like a bad year for stock prices. But that being said, there are some, like we've been saying, there are some specific areas of the bond market that can take a longer hit or bigger hit.
Yeah, and there are always exceptions too, because if you recall the dark days of 2008 during the financial crisis, if you owned a bond that had the unconditional guarantee of the U.S. government, then those did okay. But if you owned anything that had any credit risk associated with it, even a high-quality AA or AAA bond but was issued by a corporation, even those lost value because there was so much fear. And now the next year, bond prices in general, and those corporate bonds in particular, had a massive rally as people came to their senses and said, why did I sell that?
That's right.
You know.
We will continue our conversation about how an interest rate increase will affect the markets and your pocketbook. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, along with financial advisor Chris DeSimio. Our guest this afternoon, Scott Wyckoff, portfolio manager with Johnson Investment Counsel. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Chris, I guess the big question is, how's this, if there is a rate increase, how is this going to hit people in the pocketbook? What kind of effect is it going to have on people personally?
If they haven't refinanced their house yet, then it might affect someone. But many people refinanced at rates that they never thought they would see, some under 3% with 15-year fixed mortgages at 2.75%. It's hard to get much better than that. And so now, yes, it's true, mortgage interest rates have gone higher. And some people are rushing to buy houses, and that's putting kind of a bid underneath home prices because people are starting to see mortgage rates go higher. But it takes a while for all this to sink in. But if you were counting on 3.5% mortgage for a $100,000 house, and suddenly you have a 4% mortgage on a $100,000 mortgage, you're paying $500 more per year in interest. So that money doesn't get to go to, you know, to buy the TV or to support public radio or to do anything that you otherwise would do with it just from a discretionary point of view. And so in some cases, certain parts of the market might feel that more than others in the investment world. But generally, it could help it could put a little kind of choke off some of the spending. But remember, a lot of that's been offset by the fall in energy prices that has taken hold over the last year, because oil's gone from $100 a barrel, more than 100, down to 60. So it's hard to look at it just in a vacuum. You have to look at the broader picture and see what's going on all around it.
And one thing I'd add to that is, when you do see an interest rate increasing cycle, often you see the rates reflected more quickly in borrowing rates versus rates you would make on a savings account, for example, as banks will often be quick to increase the cost of a mortgage or a different kind of loan like that. So I wouldn't expect savers to, or I wouldn't advise savers to get excited about, in September, potentially rates will go up quickly in their savings account. This could be a very gradual process. It could take a few years. It will depend on how things play out.
Yeah. So we're not going to suddenly see savings accounts jump up to 2 or 3% or anything like that.
Very unlikely to happen.
Yeah. And if you think about it, let's say you walk into your friendly local bank and you see that, hey, this is great. My savings account that's paid nothing for the last 2 or 3 years is now paying
nothing.
I wonder, where's the Dr. Evil with the pinky finger now? You know, 0.25%. But staying in that same lobby, but walking down to the other end of the counter to go borrow those same dollars, what might cost you 0.25% times 2 or 3? In other words, is it possible that this might not be a bad time to look at investing in some bank stocks, without naming individual names, but that whole sector in general? Because if they're, yes, they're paying a little more for the deposits, but they're charging a lot more for the deposits on a percentage basis. Is this the kind of thing where their profit margins start looking better?
Yes, for banks in particular, it typically is. Of course, you want to understand more than just the general interest rate environment. You want to understand how that bank is doing overall. But other areas of the market that are typically affected are areas that are seen as a yield replacement or a way to enhance yield or income.
Such as
utility stocks have had a rough year so far.
Had a great year last year.
That's right, as rates fell last year. And that this year, as rates have gone up, utilities are the worst performing sector of the market. They're down about 10% this year because investors are seeing, okay, I don't necessarily need to hold these utility stocks anymore because I could get paid more elsewhere, or relatively more in a different area of the market. So utilities, sometimes telecom stocks are yield-oriented stocks that people will hold. But as rates increase, again, that is a general sign that the economy is doing well. So some sectors of the market that are tied to that, economic growth and companies that are doing well and will do well as the economy grows, those could benefit.
So, Scott, somebody who's living on fixed income, how is this going to affect them? Is there anything they should do in anticipation of this?
In general, what we advise clients is not to make rash changes because of a short-term event or an unpredictable event. And in this case, what the Fed may or may not do in September shouldn't necessarily cause people to dial right away and figure out some changes they need to make. What we advise clients to do is make sure they have a diversified portfolio that makes sense for the long term, to make sure that their bond investments are not in some of these higher risk areas of the market, and that they're not over concentrated in things that could really take a hit, versus what we would advocate, which is more of a diversified, higher quality portfolio, both in terms of bonds specifically and in general, stocks, bonds, and some alternative assets. So.
What about those of us who have bonds in our 401k plans? Is there anything we should be thinking about at this point?
Often 401k plans offer what I was mentioning before, a diversified, high quality, or intermediate term fund that is diversified. So it's important to understand what's within those funds, because I can't speak for every 401k plan. Oftentimes, there's not significant changes to be made, but awareness is always crucial. Understanding what exactly it is that you're holding is important.
So for bond investors, is it better to own individual bonds? Is it better to own them through a mutual fund or an exchange-traded fund?
For most people, mutual funds are the way to go, given the size of assets. But the higher the amount of assets, often the more efficient or economic it is to be in individual bonds. So, but often you'll see with most people, it's mutual funds.
Yeah, frequently, if you buy an individual bond as an individual investor, the difference between what you buy the bond for and what you could sell it for 5 minutes later is much bigger than when a large mutual fund manager goes into the bond market to purchase, you know, $20 million of, you know, one bond or another. Their trading costs are going to be much lower than an individual investor would experience.
And it's difficult to diversify. This is true of stocks as well. It's difficult to diversify $5,000 by buying individual securities. But with a mutual fund, no matter how small the amount, you're automatically diversifying amongst many companies. So that's why mutual funds a lot of times are an efficient way to get diversification.
Yeah.
So the easiest way to do this is if you're adding bonds into your portfolio, just do it through a bond fund because you get that diversification, and you don't have to have like tens of thousands of dollars to put into a bunch of different individual bonds. And then it's actively managed, right? So they're keeping an eye on interest rates and things like that. And
there are products available out in the marketplace that are not actively managed, that
passive.
Seek to track an index.
Mm-hmm.
And with bonds, those are typically very low cost vehicles, but there are also many actively managed as well. And what we've seen is that in the fixed income and the bond market, active managers have had more success against the benchmark than in stocks.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because there only are fixed dollar amounts issued of bonds. And so if the index has, you know, so much of company ABC, but there are no bonds of company ABC on the market to sell, then the index manager has to buy bonds of company XYZ instead. So what's called tracking error sometimes is more pronounced in bonds than it can be in stocks, just because of the finite nature of the issuance of bonds.
So I guess I should look at my bonds as something for diversification then, Chris, that's something that zigs when stocks go zag and view it that way.
They should.
In theory, they should.
They should. But understand whether they're short-term or long-term and where the credit quality is in the bonds. Very important.
That's right. We look at bonds as a way to preserve capital over time. They, like you both said, they should zag when everything else is zigging. But we might see some short-term fluctuation, not very much relative to what you might see in the stock market over time. But it's there to preserve capital.
So don't panic right now.
Correct.
No matter what the Fed does.
Never
correct.
Panic.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you very much, Scott.
Thank you.
Scott Wyckoff, Portfolio Manager with Johnson Investment Counsel. Coming up, building and protecting your credit rating and what to do if you're considering bankruptcy. Thanks to April Ayers for listening to 91.7 WVXU today.